Welcome, everybody, to My Favorite Murder of the Guardians of the Globe. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What? I'm Pete.
And just kidding. This is actually the final episode of Season 1 of Podvincible, a podcast all about Invincible on Prime Video. The episode is called Where I Really Come From, and it is wrapping up Season 1 big time. Now, as usual, if you haven't watched the episode already, go watch it because we're going to get pretty much right into spoilers. But first, to give you a little bit of a buffer zone, let's talk about this, because this is exciting news that came out the day before technically the finale came out. Is the show's already been greenlit for seasons 2 and 3. That's pretty cool.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
2 and 3. Like, that means they can really, like, tell some longer stories in season 2 and keep them going. That's very exciting.
This also feels like a very typical thing for animated shows. Obviously, Invincible's a hit. That's why they want to have it back. That's great news. But particularly with the production schedule of animation and the cast here, I imagine part of the thought process is, hey, we could bang these out back to back, release them 1 year, then the next year, so we have enough lead time to do it. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or input on that in particular.
On the making of animation?
Yeah.
What they do is they paint these clear pieces of paper with a little funny, huh? No, and then they move, the images move. If you flip, it's like a flip book.
Justin, Alex was asking you because you work in production, you know, as a line producer, you know how things work. So we were hoping for a little insight about how television is made.
Yeah, you're out in Denver right now shooting an animation, right?
That's right. It's confusing because it's hard to find the cartoons. Yeah. Casting a cartoon is hard because you need to find them. Got to go to Toontown, which is a weird
place. Scary. That's a scary place.
Pete, you still have those squeaky shoes, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah. Just in case anybody ever needs a background extra who needs
every
noise.
Time Pete and I have this fun bit, every time I go over his house, I'm like, hey, I got a bunch of dip to put your squeaky shoes in. And he's like, no, don't, not the dip. And I'm like, just kidding. I don't have any dip. Sort of a
no dip.
Rat out at the end there on that bit.
Wow. Dig deep. Amazing. If anyone knows what we're talking about, good on you. Yeah. If not, Google out of Toontown. I don't even know where the entry. I don't even know where the entry point is.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Start with Google Christopher Lloyd, and it'll get you there eventually.
The top.
The
top hit of Christopher Lloyd is eyeballs jumping out of his head. Dip.
I thought you were like saying like you would bring a like cream cheese or something to dip.
Of course, the obvious dip is cream cheese. The most normal dip, you would say. When I'm saying, like, I want to dip my chip in something, cream cheese is the first thing to come to mind. We're all normal people doing a normal podcast, is what I'm saying.
There you go. That's probably enough spoiler time to get into Invincible and talk.
Is that what that was?
Yeah,
that was revamping?
That was on purpose.
Sure. No, we had written in our breakdown for the episode absolute nonsense for 4 minutes. To your point about the animation schedule, yes, it does take longer to animate, so it does make a lot of sense to greenlight 2 seasons at once for a show that they are pretty confident it will be a success and was a great success. And then getting all the VO talent together is also very difficult because these are big celebrities, and they're busy in a million different ways. So it's going to take some time to do that. But I do think they're going to want to make this happen as fast as they possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with The Boys already shooting, I think, season 3, and they're already starting to work on the spinoff as well. Amazon is clearly trying to buff up the comic book superhero side of their production as much as possible. So yeah, to your point, it takes a while to animate these things, but I would not be surprised if we see Invincible season 2 next year at some point.
I agree. And also, of all the animated shows, this one, the style of it is a little easier. Like, there's not as much, and I'm out of my depth talking about this, but there's not as like big rendered backgrounds or anything. It does feel like it is sort of more on the simple side of animation.
Yeah, I mean, and once you have that stuff set, you have the character set, you have the background set, at least there's a little bit of an easier lift there once they're all loaded up and locked and ready to go. But as we saw, and as we'll get to when we talk about the end of the episode, there's a lot of different places and big places that Invincible season 2 and potentially 3 are going to go. So we'll get there when we get there. To give you the broad overview of this episode, though, relatively straightforward in terms of the plot, though not the way that it's executed, where we're picking up on the end of the last episode. Omni-Man is revealed to, well, be something other than what he said he was. He is covered in the blood of the immortal. Mark has seen him kill the immortal, and they have that conversation kind of over the course of this episode, as Omni-Man reveals himself not to be a benevolent superhero, but actually an alien conqueror from Viltrum. He wants Mark to join him. Mark is not super into the idea of subjugating his friends and family, and they get into an enormous knockdown, drag-out fight in the most graphic way possible, as Omni-Man tries to show Mark how fragile and unimportant humans are. Ultimately, Mark does appeal to Omni-Man's humanity, I guess we can call it that. I mean, it doesn't have any.
Viltrumanity?
Yeah, I think his love for baseball is what he tapped into.
Yes. He tapped into the national pastime.
Exactly.
Yeah. He was like, I hate humans,
but, you know, it was fun to watch my son hit one out of the park, you know?
That's right. Take me out to the ball game.
And at the end, in the last quarter of the episode, last third of the episode, we're getting a bunch of wrap-up and a bunch of teases for what's coming down the pike as everybody deals with the emotional fallout of what happened in the episode. But of course, the big thing here was the Omni-Man Mark knockdown drag-out fight. This is not directly from the comic books. There's issue 12, and then I think it's 12 is the one with this fight, right? Or is 12 ends with we need to talk and then 13 is the fight? Either way.
Okay.
Yeah, I should have looked this up beforehand.
I think so. Yeah. But either way, this is
12 to 13. And this is pretty much the most iconic event in the comic book series' entire run. This is the thing that everybody talks about, the big twist. It's been kind of amazing, honestly, to see people who have not read the comic book reacting to this, stunned and shocked, which means the TV show did its job exactly right.
Yeah, and especially the way that they handled, showed Omni-Man's lack of care for humanity was just so hard to watch, and really showed the difference between comics and seeing it play out like it was brutal, vicious,
he really turned it up. I mean, that whole subway sequence was just so brutal.
And not to interrupt your thought process, Pete, but just to mention for anybody who hasn't read the comic books, basically what happens in the book is it is this enormous earth-shaking fight between Mark and Nolan. The scene on the mountain is pretty much the same. They certainly fight through some cities, but you don't see any of the fallout, and there's nothing about Nolan straight up killing people. In this episode, we see him kill the pilot in front of Mark. We see him knock down the building, and he's not able to save people. And then there's that absolutely gruesome subway thing you're talking about. Those are all original for the series.
And what's so devastating about it is it's all these action movie tropes that we're used to of like, a big fight and there's all these disaster things and the hero comes in and saves a couple people. We don't see a lot of death on screen, but it just flipped. Instead, we're seeing everyone die. The hero can do nothing and the villain is just devastating everything.
Yeah, that whole like him being punched and like in the street and like rolling and like all the chaos and people that kills was just so, and then like the shot of him like holding that lady's just arm.
He saved the arm. He did save her arm. So yeah, good work.
They could bring her back for season two,
or give that donate that arm to another person who needs it.
I think you're over the line.
Here you go.
On that one.
I'm always bringing my extra arms and throwing them in the donation box at Goodwill.
So many extra arms.
Also the way that like Mark is like struggling with it, like, somebody must be controlling you. Let my dad free. Like that moment was so amazing to see, like as an animation versus like still. And like, then the whole part where he talks about like love and how he loves the mom, like someone would love their dog or puppy. I was like, my God.
You were like, oh my God, this is great. I own a cat. So I know exactly how Omni-Man is feeling right now.
Yeah, in your household, Pete, your girlfriend and your cat are given sort of the same level of prominence, right? That's everyone's equal in your eyes.
That line is right out of the comic book, I see her as more as a pet. But to your point, Justin, I think part of it is that we've seen Omni-Man play out entirely differently over the course of the season than we do in the comic books. In the comics, by the very nature of him kind of being there and flat and you hearing whatever voice you're going to hear in your head, there's a lot of fill-in you need to do with Omni-Man. Here, we've heard J.K. Simmons, the reveal that something is off about him happens much earlier in the show than it did in the comic book. So we've had a lot of time to live with not just his malevolence, but also the idea that we're kind of sympathetic to him sometimes. And maybe, even though he's probably a bad guy, maybe he does feel something for Debbie. Maybe he does feel something for Mark, which makes this episode so much harder to watch.
Yeah.
But it also, despite how crazy it is, it feels like it is maybe closer to what a superhero reality would be. Mm-hmm. Like, we're getting away from sort of that, like, oh, the superhero saved a building and no one died thing. Instead, it's like the very real thing of, like, if a conqueror came to Earth, he or she would not care about anybody. There would be ants to them. And then we get to see the repercussions of that.
Well, and it leads up to this line that is straight from the comic book as well, where Nolan is wailing on Mark and saying, what do you care? What's going to be left in 500 years? What are you going to have from 500 years? And he says, you, Dad.
Oh,
and that's the thing that gets through. And they nailed that moment. Absolutely. Oh,
such a well done. And you see when Nolan knocks Mark's teeth out, that's when you're like, oh, he's not invincible. This is not going to turn around for him in a fight sense. And then when it turns around on a purely emotional level, and even that, just seeing that scene after seeing so much devastation and the baseball scene, I thought was really well done because it confuses our emotional status. And we're like, we're in Nolan's head for a second there in a gut positive way where he really does look at his son as a person, and then it flashes back to him almost killing him, and he sees him as a person there too. And it was just really well done.
I'm really impressed how, like, the show is different enough that even though I've read the comic, but I'm not like, oh, here comes this part, I'm still like, oh shit, this is crazy, you know. And but it still feels like the comic, it's impressive how it's its own thing and also the comic at the same time.
The other thing that we should probably talk about here, and this gets to a little bit of what both of you are saying, but Omni-Man, in my mind, is still irredeemable. We get into his head. We understand him. Clearly, there's an emotional appeal. We get that great shot as he's flying away from Earth and the tear is coming off of his face and freezing in space. Again, straight
from
the
raining down, and maybe like someone could catch it.
Yeah, maybe that lady's arm could catch it.
Yeah. Rain is just Nolan's tears.
Mm-hmm. But he still beat the shit out of his son, you know? So he's not a character, I think, at the same time that you should necessarily be feeling for or be like, oh, you'll get better at some point, you know? Do you guys agree?
Yeah. Yeah. The guy's dead to me.
yeah, it's hard to come back from that just as a character. But also, it does seem like Mark still, you know, cares the way we see afterwards. Like, he's emotionally wrecked. Sound like he's like, yeah, that guy's bad. He's, like, still in the middle on it.
And to be fair, he grew most of his teeth back, it seems like, as well.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't take he didn't pay a dental price.
But speaking of bloody messes, the title card bit, I mean, glorious and fun. Do you think at the start of season two, it's going to be clean slate? Like, it'll start and each episode will get bloodier again? Or
bunch of Band-Aids on it.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
There you go. A couple of arms thrown on there.
Oh, we got to stop with this arm bit.
I think they got to clean it up a little bit. Start over with a fresh.
Yeah. Hashtag arm army.
Nope. No.
My favorite character of the episode? I guess the arm. Oh, at least one of the fingers.
Oh, come on, man.
So the other thing that's going on while this is happening, again, original for the show, is we're following the Guardians of the Globe and what's going on with them. This whole plot line I thought was really interesting thrown in the middle here, because we could have had Razor focus on Omni-Man and Mark of this episode like we did in the comics, but it's broken up by this plot arc here that ultimately ends with Rex stepping up, cleaning the blood off the wall, Black Samson being like, we're not ready yet. Everybody stepping up, and Black Samson being like, you kids are okay.
Yeah, what sort of a weird turnaround there. Mm-hmm. The kids step up and we're like, get out of here, dude. And he's like, I think you guys are all right.
No, but I think it does like accomplish the fact that like they're finally acting like a team, and I think that's what he was trying to do there. It did seem a little weird, but I did like that moment, and it was fun that it was Mantzoukas who was doing it, you know, because he seems like not the guy. But I'm glad they're also showing the other side of this character as well.
My leadership style is the same way, like get everyone to unite against you and then jump immediately on board with them.
Well, but what about the dumping out all the milk and putting in booze? Like, is that part of your leadership style? Because it should be.
My thing with the dumping out the milk is you're never going to get the milk out of the milk mm-hmm. carton, you know, and a milky beer is not what you want.
They're both eventually fermented, though. It's basically the same thing. Cheese and beer go well together.
Do you use like big oil cans? Like, what do you empty out and put your booze in then?
Oil can.
Campbell's Progresso New England clam chowder cans. Oh my God. That's how I store my alcohol.
Oh my God. Oh wow.
Pour them in.
Wait, I've
shake
lost
it
track of
that.
That's where you store your oil, or that's where you store your beer? What are we talking about?
Alcohol.
I store my oil
cause
in pickle
of
jars.
And solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah, basically, I bring everything home from the supermarket and then switch it all around.
Yeah, exactly. And my pickle juice in my wine box.
I like the plot line. Like you were saying, Pete, I think the Rexplode arc is somebody who is irredeemable. I think part of that is because Jason Mantzoukas is very charming, so that probably helps quite a bit. But I liked him going up and wiping off the blood at the end. I like the choice to have them say, no, we can't take on Omni-Man. We can't be part of this fight. We'll get killed, but we're going to try to help as many people as possible. I thought that was great and said a really nice thing about heroism and the way that they're going to work going forward. And it threw me a lot that, though this makes sense, that Ross Marquand is doing Rudy, I guess we're calling him, Robot Rudy's voice now instead of Zachary Quinto, but I'll roll with it. It's all good.
Yeah, it is a little. And technically, Rudy will grow up to be Mantzoukas.
There you go.
Right?
And someday, Ross Marquand will also grow up to be Jason Mantzoukas.
Yep, that's the precedent we're setting. Keep your eyes on those people.
So let's talk about Debbie a bit, because she goes through the emotional ringer this episode, both watching everything that's going down, dealing with the revelations about her husband, watching and seeing what happens to her son. And then by the end, she's in a pretty bad place. What did you think about her in this hour?
I mean, super hard to watch her watch Nolan. And, you know, she's with Cecil and sort of like, Cecil's the person that she can trust in this episode, and he's not super trustworthy, I feel like. So it just, you feel a little anxiety or stress watching Debbie do everything.
Yeah,
and
but
you know
as
that she's
far
in pain.
As people know, Cecil is trustworthy. I mean, it seems like Cecil's doing all the right things for this family.
No, but he's a little, he does in this episode, but he's suspicious to me. Like, I mean,
Why? Because he's got a scar on his face? What?
No, anyone with a scar has been up to something.
I think slightly, my suspicions are raised when he has a cyborg factory.
Or a room that nobody can see?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's some, the cyborg taking, what's his name, and bringing the cyborg army into his, into the government, and then comfortably where we land here, he's like, cyborg army with, like, really aggressive grimaces on their faces, which is like, make the faces a little nicer if you want to make nice soldiers. That's what I'm saying. He's up to no good. He's making mean looking cyborgs.
Here's the thing, and I don't want to cause any controversy here, but when I see a cyborg walking on the street with a frown like that, I'm like, come on, give me a little smile, cyborg.
Smile.
Come on. Be happy. You got those cyborg legs.
Oh,
it's summer.
Stop it. This is not a funny bit.
Wow. No, it's a terrible bit.
Awful. Yeah.
I feel awful right now.
You should.
So, and where Debbie ends up, like, it was interesting. We see a lot of Suit Guy in the sort of the epilogue of this episode, and then Debbie and Suit Guy hanging out because they're the only ones that really went through this in the same way. And then obviously her, like, being so upset at home with Mark. It's just, you know, it's not a fun arc at all for Debbie.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we could talk about this a little bit. This is not too much of a spoiler, but the place that she ends up in for a good chunk of the comic going forward is very bad. It just gets worse and worse as it goes. So it's not going to be fun to watch, but I do think it's going to be some really good dramatic stuff for Sandra Oh that I'm really interested. Excited is probably the wrong word, but interested to see going forward.
Well, and to that point, I do think that I'm hoping they'll change it a little bit and give her some more bright spots because she's been such a larger and better character in the animated show. So hopefully they'll extend that. So
I thought it was cool that she went back to the tailor there and hung out a little bit.
His name is Sukai.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
I think it's art, but I don't know. Whatever you want to call it.
Art? That sounds fake.
Yeah, it does. But do you think there's romance abloom in there?
Come on, man. Her husband just turned out to be a real fucking douchebag, and she's dealing with a lot. Don't push her into another relationship.
Yeah, every time I'm sad, I have sex with my dry cleaner.
Oh, my God.
Your therapist told you to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's
that's
part
a
of
common prescription when it comes to feeling.
Remind
better.
Me okay. to never go to the same place that you go to.
I'm just dropping off 4 shirts, and oh my God. And I'm feeling a little anxious
it.
Today.
Stop.
Ooh, I stubbed my toe. I got to go to the dry cleaners real quick.
The other things that we get flashes of, Pete, curious to get your take on this because of the whole romance angle of things. But by the end of the episode, Amber and Mark are back together.
That was tough because it was the second doorbell. Eve was so close to being the first one into Mark's arms, but Amber beat her there. That was a tough sequence
of
doorbells.
Meave shipper, hashtag Meave.
Well, I very much like Amber's different, and I like her in this series a lot. I'm not shipping against it, but it's, you know, it was
that's
so
the thing
close.
With ships, though, Pete. You got to sort of choose one.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You can't ride on 2 ships.
Hashtag Meave or hashtag Mamber.
You know, I want Amber. I want Mark to be happy. You know, that's what I care about. You know, I think that.
It's very nice.
Choose a ship, Pete. The boat's sinking. Choose a ship. Amberk or Meave?
I don't like the Amberk, but I do like Amber and him.
What, you want the man always needs to come first?
What?
Is that what you're saying? The man always needs to come first in the ship name?
No. What are you doing to me?
Amberk.
Yeah, but the Burke part is weird. I feel like
Ambark.
I ship Ambeve. I think they should get together.
There you go.
Yeah. Strong choice.
Thanks.
Yeah. I do think, I mean, the Amber thing felt a little, like, fast. Like, she's just back, and it just points
when
to...
You think somebody's dead, it gets emotional, and then when they're alive, you're like, let's get back together, you know?
Being surprised your partner's alive is not a great foundation for a relationship, let me just say. I mean, I keep faking my death with my wife, and you're sort of running out of steam.
Yeah, you're doing great, man. You're doing great.
Yeah, I'm alive, but don't tell Molly I told her I died, so don't tell her.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm
going
to come back
to the podcast,
and really reignite the relationship. No. Yeah. And that's a great way to find out if I'm alive is listen to any of the podcasts that we do.
If I had one request of season 2 when it comes to Amberk, I would say no more back and forth. Like, make a choice in one direction there for a while, because so far we've had... Out of 8 episodes, I think they've broken up 2 to 3 times and got back together 2 to 3 times. And I understand some relationships are like that.
It's high school, man. Come on.
Well, just dramatically is all I'm saying. Just from the dramatic TV perspective, I want to see make a choice, because that will make any potential, if they're together for a while, that will make any potential breakup that much more impactful. And if they're apart for a while, it'll make it more... should they get back together? And that'll make that aspect more interesting.
They won't they?
Exactly.
If they're smart, they're listening and taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really like the return of Alan the alien. I thought that was a fun.
You know, love him.
Well, it's fun the way that they connect, and they're two strangers from different worlds. And, you know, it's nice. It's nice that they can sit in the moon and read each other's minds. I think that's fun.
You ship Malin.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Malin.
Before we get there, though, because we should talk through all of the different cliffhangers, there's one or two other people we should talk about. What is your take on Adam Eve going forward and where she ends up in this episode.
I mean, she gets sort of a downbeat, I feel like, in the end of this episode. Like, she's like, guys, I'm Adam Eve. And they're like, so? Who cares? we get it. And
she's
it's like,
no, I'm the pink one? That was funny.
Yeah. It was funny, but it was sort of a bummer for her. And then she's off in her cabin.
Sweet tree fort, asshole. It's not a cabin. No.
Of course, it's a cabin in the tree, a tree cabin. And I do think that it feels like she's on a lonely track, and I don't know where that's
going. It seems like
to
she's
go.
Living her best life in Ewok Village. Get off her back, man.
But let me see. Let's meet the Ewoks. What if she starts dating Wicket? Would you ship?
go ahead. What's that hashtag?
That one's a hard one. A lot of vowels. A lot of vowels in there.
Weave? Hashtag weave?
Yeah. Weaving it.
Evicket? I don't know. We'll figure it out by season two, I guess.
Yeah, when this actually happens.
Yes. I agree. I think we need to see something a little more with Adam Eve because, like we would talk about the last couple of episodes, she's just been kind of coasting along being like, I'm happy. The end. Yeah. And that's it. So I want to see a little more of her separate from Mark. What is going on with her life? Give her some obstacles that she needs to overcome. I think that'll be interesting. And maybe she ends up on the Guardians of the Globe. I think that would be interesting as well and give her more characters to work off of. And then the last one before we get to the different cliffhangers is William, who is kind of thrown in there as well. What do you think his function is going forward in the series?
It is a little, I mean, he has some sidekick energy for Mark here, both in his personal life and as a superhero. I think he could sort of be running interference for Mark when things start to get complicated, as he probably is going to rise to be the hero of the planet, like taking the place of Omni-Man. At least that's what maybe Cecil and other people want him to do. So then William is there to just get his homework and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what else?
Yeah, he's going to cover for Mark and give him all the hot gas from high school and keep him in the loop how things are going on the ground while he's living in the sky.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's talk about the cliffhangers then. As Pete mentioned, Mark ends up on the moon talking to Alan, and we have a bunch of flashes of things that have been left dangling over the course of the season.
What a fun montage.
Very fun montage. Also, I'll mention I really liked before that there was the clothes burning off effect as Invincible flies into space. That was very cool. But they're chatting. Apparently, the Coalition of Planets is banding together to stop the Viltrumites. They want Mark's help to take them down. He's kind of waffling about that. So that's one of the things. We get Viltrumites are coming for Earth, and we get teases of some villains we're probably going to see in season two. Also on Mars, the Sequids are taking over. Mahler twins are in jail, but they seem pretty happy about that. Doc Seismic, as we speculated a couple of podcasts back, is alive and ruling an underground kingdom of molten monsters. Titan is ruling the criminal underworld. The age aliens, right? Whatever we're called. I don't remember the name of the race.
The age quickly, yeah.
Yeah, they are coming for Nolan, in particular the Flaxons. There we go. And Battle Beast, it's in space. Cecil has an army of cyborgs. And the last bit is Invincible says, I guess I'm going to finish high school, I guess. And then Alan says, sounds good. What is high school? Very funny last line. But of these cliffhangers here, these teases, what are you most looking forward to coming forward in season two?
Mars.
The Mars stuff is good. I'm excited for that. And
that was crazy in the comics, so.
And Battle Beast. I mean, that's a great rematch that we need to see Mark do better.
Wait, Alex, I'm going to guess what yours is. High school. You can't wait for the high school stuff.
What is it like? I never went.
Oh, that's right. You went from middle school to college?
Yeah,
that's right. I had sort of like a whole Doogie Howser thing going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not for being a doctor, for being a podcaster, TV critic.
Yep, exactly. No, I'm looking forward to the Viltrumites, honestly, because the place that we've left off here with Mark, I keep mixing them up, Nolan absolutely murdering Mark. We kind of know what's coming down the pike from the comic books, but if you have three Viltrumites coming to Earth, what does that mean for Invincible? How is he actually going to stop them when they couldn't stop one of them? you know?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big deal. There's also a potentially very dicey storyline coming that I don't want to necessarily say anything about, but I'm very curious to see whether it will get the same treatment. Robert Kirkman has been very open about, hey, it's 20 years later and we've reevaluated certain things and we did something wrong initially. So with one of those Viltrumites, things get a little uncomfortable, I would say it generously. Oh, yeah. So I hope they do make some changes there in terms of the way that plays out, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I got to think they will.
Yeah. So there you go. That is it for the first season of Invincible. Before we go, though, what was your... Oh, did you want to talk about some other moments?
Just overall, I thought the season as a whole was really, really just ironclad, really well done. Like, when you're adapting a comic book so directly with the original creators, it's often you fall into the thing of like, well, let's just do it. But I feel like this team really worked on it and made it so much better and added a lot to it. And this show is a show I've been recommending to people. A lot of, like, you know, 5-6-year-olds really tune in and watch this.
Yeah. Who love cartoons.
Love cartoons and just like a fun Saturday morning light watch while you're having your favorite breakfast cereal.
Oh, man.
But really just like recommending the show to people because it's so good.
I got to say that, like, tight season. Like, they really put in a lot of stuff. There wasn't a lot of access. Like, it moves really well. I was really impressed with all, like, each character had moments, but it didn't feel like it was, like, dangling on them or anything. I think they're really just, like, sticking to the material, moving through it, but making their own choices. I was really impressed at how great a package this was as a season from start to finish.
And you love a tight package, right, Pete?
No, Justin does, but okay.
You bring it up.
The bits in there too. The reoccurring bits, just fantastic.
Whatever happened to the father son characters from the?
I don't know. We got to pick up with them in season two. I agree with you guys. I thought this was great, and I really have been as well recommending to people all over the place. I think of the three of us, I started a little slowly on it at the beginning. I felt like, yeah, this is good, this is fine, but it just ramped up every single episode, not just in terms of the brutality, but the emotion and the humor, and became something really fantastic by the end of the season. I also think we mentioned this a little bit earlier towards the top of the podcast, but I think this is a great companion piece to The Boys, which has been an enormous hit, because they hit that same sweet spot of not just comic book source material and not just insane over-the-top ultra violence, but, like I was saying, mixing the humor and the heart and the interesting characters and surprising storylines that, in a similar way to The Boys, where that's poking at the idea of comic books and superheroes while still buying into a lot of those tropes. Invincible does the same thing. That's great. I'm very excited to see both of them going forward on the service. It's very cool.
Yeah, love the service.
Love a good service. Before we wrap up here, what was your Invincible moment from this episode?
I'll jump in and say I really liked, and I thought it was emotional and difficult to watch, the montage after Mark wakes up fighting his dad. We see all of his dad's words juxtaposed with both the positive things that he did for him as a father and then the absolutely brutal, devastating things we saw in this episode. I thought that was such a great way of, like, both showing these superhero characters in these different roles and villains. And the way it is when you, like, have parents and you grow up and you're like, wow, when I was a kid, my parents were like, they were my heroes. And you're like, but they were also people and made mistakes. You realize that as you grow up. And to see that juxtaposed to this, or heightened to this superhero world, was great.
Pete, what about you?
I got to say, the helicopter kind of sequence where they were kind of like, the animation was like that helicopter blade going around, that was like,
yeah, that's really... I think the same sequence Justin just said, right? Am I wrong?
I don't know. I don't remember a helicopter being involved.
It's right after Nolan leaves. They cut to Mark lying on the ground. The helicopter sort of still framed.
Oh, I see. No, this was later. This was after. Yeah. I'm talking about sort of the montage.
Gotcha. Yes.
And right. Because I agree with you, Pete. That was cool. It, like, the fact that it was like a slideshow.
Yeah.
It was, and you could, like, see all the reactions. And especially in an animated show, to jump to stills like that was a strong, cool
very
choice.
Very powerful, cool choice that I really liked. And that's why, I mean, if they can keep finding, like, artistic ways to kind of tell stories, I think it's a great use of the animation. You know, there's just It's just fun to see, especially when something you're used to the material, when you get new stuff like that, it really adds a lot to it. So that was my moment. But overall, I've been really happy with this first season.
I think for me, it's got to be the subway scene. That's the thing that's going to stick with me for a very, very long
good
time.
Luck riding the subway next time you're on there.
That's a pretty typical day on the New York City subway. Yeah. That's why it stuck with me. I was like, it's been a while because of coronavirus. Don't really regularly ride the subway. I miss that. You know, when somebody slams through the train and just rips us all to shreds.
That's why you always say, you hear people on the subway saying, watch out for the face coming through the subway. Away from the kid face.
Yeah. That's how I pick up most of my loose arms, to be honest with you.
Oh, my God.
And again, thank you for recycling those arms.
Anytime. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. to Crowdcast at YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Invincible. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Of course, we will be back for season 2 of Invincible, whenever it hits. In the meantime, we've got plenty of other podcasts to check it out. For Kirk Mania, this is Alex.
Yeah! This is Justin. Wow. Pete gets the win.
Woo-hoo!
Pete and his girlfriend and his cat. Again, all in equal footing.